This episode of the Flush Podcast is brought to you by North Dakota Tourism, Federal Premium Ammunition, Onyx Hunt, Chief Upland, and by Huron, South Dakota. Today, I'm in Montana with my buddy George Lyle. We traveled west to open our upland bird hunting season in Big Sky Country. We'll share the good and the bad from opening week. Let's just say there's a lot more good than bad.
The Flush. So fast, it hardly seems real. So vivid, the moment freezes in time before erupting in a blur of spurs and feathers. It's why we changed the way upland loads are built with Prairie Storm. Exclusive flight control FlexWad technology and a mix of copper-plated lead and flight stopper pellets combine to create dense, deadly shot strains through any choke. Longer shots, more power, fewer missed birds. Only from Federal.
If you're looking for a great bird hunting destination this season, then I strongly recommend that you consider one of my favorite places to hunt, North Dakota. North Dakota is a bird hunter's paradise. You can hunt both waterfowl and upland birds all in the same day. Ducks in the morning, pheasants, sharp-tailed grouse, and Hungarian partridge in the afternoon, or vice versa. North Dakota has a population estimate of 2.9 million breeding ducks, which is 19% above the long-term average. And their prairie pothole region is smack dab in the middle of the central flyway. Last season, pheasants, sharp-tailed grouse, and Hungarian partridge numbers rose in North Dakota, and there are reports coming out that some areas of the state have even higher numbers this season. I've been talking about the bird numbers in North Dakota for months now, and there's a chance that this could be one of the best hunting seasons we've seen in decades. North Dakota has approximately 800,000 acres of private land open to public walk-in hunting. For the latest plots guide, visit the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Bag your limit this fall in North Dakota. Visit legendarynd.com to start planning your hunting adventure today. Welcome to another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank. I'm your host. Brandon Morton, as always, produces this program, but he's a long ways away right now because I'm sitting in bird camp in eastern Montana next to my buddy George Lyle. Brandon is back in Minnesota, where we call home. George, please take a big swift swig of coffee and then tell our bird hunting friends hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. If you hear a little noise in the background, that's cameraman Cowboy Troy opening up some eggs right now. He's making us some breakfast. We're sitting in, I guess we'll call it bird camp, because everywhere we go when we're hunting is camp, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we talked about bringing our my Ice Castle fish house, because last year when we were in Montana, you and I, we were camping in the middle of a field. And I really enjoyed that, but I also like the ability to drive, you know, at least the speed limit on the freeway on the way out here instead of the bucking winds and 60 miles an hour, which turned our 12-hour drive into 16
pretty
maybe
low,
last
yeah.
year.
Pretty close. I mean, hauling that thing, not only is it slow you down a little bit, but the amount of gas stops.
Yeah.
And we pulled, 20.2 miles to the gallon on this trip.
Oh, you're just showing off now.
Yeah, I am. The last trip was like, I don't know, 8 or 10.
Both trips have been awesome.
Yeah.
And it's opening week, so happy opener to you and all the other bird hunters that opened up this week around the country. September 1st is a day that we look forward to every year, like all of the other hunters. Opening day, what does that mean to you, George?
Opening day is pretty close to Christmas morning.
You know? Yeah.
It's like, you know, the first, you step out of the truck, you get the dogs rigged up, and it's like you open that first present. And I'm not talking at my age now. I'm talking about when you're like 10.
Right.
You're 10 and you got your first Red Ryder BB gun. You know, I mean, and I'll say opening bird season to me is like that.
Speaking of your age, how many openers have you...
Wow. That's,
I think I can do that because we've hunted together long enough. But how many openers have you had? Any guess?
I'd rather not count. I know this much. I got a lot more to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long time being in the bird, out chasing birds. So,
well, you and I have hunted now. Let's see, where have we hunted?
Oh my gosh,
we've hunted Minnesota, Oklahoma, Ontario,
Wyoming,
Montana. South Dakota?
Nope.
No,
I've never done South Dakota with you.
Well, it's funny because it's the closest one to us, and we skip right past it.
Well, it's difficult. We live a few hours away from each other, and it's mm-hmm. difficult to get together mm-hmm. to all just hunt in our home state.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, so there's, for people that maybe don't know who you are, you're one of my best bird hunting buddies. I call you my bird dog training mentor, as well as a bunch of other names that I probably shouldn't say on the show. Wow. But
that's not, you didn't.
You can go back and watch several television shows that we've produced together, and I tell people this all the time. I get comments on every show that we produce, and I love them, and I've told you this, but I think you're probably the most you're the most colorful people I've hunted with. A lot of the words you say we have to beep out.
Oh, come on.
I'm just kidding. But you have a lot of wisdom, and it comes through in your how you portray yourself out there. So when people comment, they're always asking questions about you because you generate a lot of feedback when you're out there. And I really do attribute that to the years that you've spent working with dogs in the hunting that you've done really all over the country. You and I get along so well because you're like me. You love to go to new places and hunt where you've never been before and hunt different species of birds. And you love dogs, and you go and go and go until you make it happen. And that's what I love to do. And I think people, you know, when they watch our TV shows, they might think, oh my gosh, you know, they're just covered up in birds. And sometimes we are, but usually it takes a little while to find that. To put into perspective, yesterday, my dog ran about 35 miles, which that's her own fault, by the way.
Well,
but you and I put on over, I don't know, close to 15, I bet. Maybe not quite that, 12 miles yesterday?
Oh, I think all of 12. But let's go back to Daisy and how far. That's in a total day.
Yeah.
And she hunted all day. I mean, not.
Well, no.
Not
it's
all,
too hot to hunt all day.
Yeah, not all. Sorry. Not all day. But when we were hunting, mm-hmm. she was with us.
Yeah.
So she's a year and a half old dog.
Yep.
And she's a pointing breed. That's her job. Her job is to go cover ground. So you and I only have to walk, whatever we said, 12 miles. I mean, my dogs were right in there. I mean, they were 13 and 15 each time we set them down.
Yeah.
So you call them like that together. Daisy's right in there with them. And they're all pointing breeds. Even Minnie, the English Cocker, she still put, she had two less miles on.
Than those
two
other
to,
dogs?
2 to 3 less miles than the other dogs. So she's covering ground too. It's just in front of us. And that gives you perspective because she's within 35 yards of me the whole time. Except for maybe to make a retrieve. But that just shows how much boot leather we're putting down on the ground and how far we are walking. I heard it, I think it was yesterday, I think it was Ben Bredigan said.
Yeah, we should set the stage. So you, me, Ben Bredigan, and Simon Titka. We all came together out here in Montana to celebrate the opener. We filmed a television show. So we're excited to share that with you. We'll give you some nuggets here on this episode and this podcast, as well as our views. But anyway, back to you.
Well, Ben turned to me, and I heard you say it, but Ben turned to me and looked at me and said, "Yep, you and Travis always want to see what's over the next hill," because we were about to I think we were making a swing maybe back towards the truck. And you look and you're like, oh, but look at that cover.
I know you cannot go
look at that
and
cover
see what's
up there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, let's go. You know? Well,
and see, growing up, I always would myself go over to that cover and kick it. And when I started hunting with you, I watched your dogs. And even this week, I still am amazed that every piece of cover that I think looks good, when your dog sees it, goes beeline straight to it, runs, you know, if it's a rock pile 500 yards out in the middle of a wheat field, your dog runs out there and does a loop around it just to double check it, and sometimes two loops to make sure. My dog is like, she's flying through the field, you know, just a missile. And I'm like, go to the rock pile. And sometimes she does, but she doesn't have that experience to tell her,
right,
I have to go look at that because there's a really good chance that that's where a bird's going to be hiding.
Absolutely. And she knows her birds. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know she knows her birds.
Yeah, she's slammed on some pretty good points.
She finished yesterday in style, you know, in style.
Yeah.
And even in spot, you said we should go that way. And I was like, gosh, I don't know if the birds are really going to be over there. Also, we look over there and Daisy's on point.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you know, you always got to check all the spots. And you and I always want to check all the spots. And our dogs. I mean, they're objectives. And those dogs, after experience, I mean, my dogs are 9 and 8 years old, the pointers.
Yep. And Boondoggin, as I always call it, and Tucker, yeah. Those are your two dogs. English pointers.
Yep.
And then Minnie is
English Cocker.
Yep. And how old is she?
She's 4.
Yep. So you're about due for another puppy.
It's coming this spring.
Any interest in a poinsettia?
I love Daisy. I got a lot of time with Daisy.
Yeah.
And she's a wonderful dog.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to go straight up English pointer.
Yeah.
I don't mean to, you know.
Well, so you've had...
I'm sure Tyler might listen to this.
Yeah.
No offense, Tyler.
Yeah.
He's got awesome dogs, too.
He does. You know? And it's between you and Tyler are the reason why that I have the dog that I have, which, by the way, she's curled up over there.
Yeah.
And she's like, guys, are we going to hunt? And if not, that's cool with me because I'm just going to go ahead and lay here. I put on some miles.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, I love it when she's curled up after a hunt like that. And you know that she just ran her heart out, but also she was doing what she absolutely loved. So here's a question for you. Do you think bird dogs are, you know, everyone says their dog has the biggest heart. Do you think they're selfish or do they have the biggest heart? You know, because are they doing it for you? Or because I look at Daisy sometimes and I'm like, put on the brakes. I'm like, come on. You know, when you're running, are you doing that for me? Girl, do you have the biggest heart and you're really doing that for me? Or are you doing it for you? Because I'm trying to tell you to get your bleep and bleep over here. And you're just not listening to anything because you're doing what you want to do.
Well, she has a big heart.
Oh, for sure.
She's a young dog.
Yeah.
I mean, she's barely a dog. She's still a puppy. And she's still in training and all that. And it's all going to come around. I mean, Tucker's 9 years old, and sometimes you look at him and go, you're over there 395, 425, 450, and you're wondering, okay, we're kind of going to the right, and you're still going left. And the next thing you know, he's coming around out, and he's out in front of us 120 yards. Mm-hmm. But they're 400 yards away, and in this country, we can't see that far because the rolling terrain and the, you know, just the, whatever, the bushes, everything. Elson, you know, he might be coming back, and now he's at 280, and we got a point. Then we make our way over there.
Are they doing it for you, or are they doing it for themselves?
I think they're doing it for us. I know they're doing it for us.
Yeah.
Because how many birds are we pushing up wild? How many birds we push up wild where the dogs weren't in the action in the last 3 days? I mean, a handful? Many.
Yeah, a couple, but not nearly. Of the hundreds of birds that we saw, spoiler alert, hundreds of birds that we saw,
so
the dogs accounted for almost all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have pointers for a reason. Because I walk 12 miles, they run 35.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
And we saw hundreds of birds. Mm-hmm. We might have seen, and again, spoiler alert, maybe we saw 100 birds But hey, maybe we saw more. Mm-hmm. I'm not sitting there out here. I'm not counting. In the North Woods, you know, in a rough grouse and woodcock country. Yeah,
you got your little clicker.
I've got my counters.
Oh, count that one. Wait, did I hear that? Yep, count that one.
Well, I don't know if I count the hears, but I certainly count the bird contacts with the dogs.
Drum? I heard a drum. Count that one.
Oh, wow. Oh. That's pretty rich, Travis Frank.
Well, so my dog has the biggest heart. When we're at home, she wants to love and cuddle and do all that. And when we're in the field, she's like, you know, just heavy breathing because it's like an engine starting. Yeah. She wants to just like, you
like
know,
a big locomotive. Like
if I lifted up her back end, the legs would be going. And then she just, she's, you know, we got in a line and we all did the release. And I just laugh every time because it's just like shotgun blast, you know.
It reminds me of like motocross racers at the gate.
Yes.
You know? And literally, not quite as much dirt comes flying out behind them, but you don't want to be standing behind a bird dog when you send them off the line.
Oh, my gosh. My son, a couple weeks ago, he competed in a dirt bike race for the first time at our county fair. It was awesome. But some of these dads, you know, were just as jacked up as the kids, and they've done it for a long time. So it was a big learning experience for me to see what I didn't know, what my son didn't know. You know, we look down the line and here are these dads lifting the back end of these little 50cc dirt bikes and the kids are going, wee, 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 clearing them out. And I lean over to Wes and I'm like, all right, buddy, if you want to hit the jump and jump it, that's cool. But if you don't, that's cool too. You know, you just do whatever you feel comfortable for. And these kids are, you know, and they're on the line and whoa, and they take off. And that's exactly what our dogs did.
Yeah. So go back.
Yeah.
Go back as a dog trainer. I want you to go back and I don't know if you heard what you said, but what did you tell your son?
Hey, if you want to hit that jump, you go ahead. And if not, because I didn't want him to go flying. Some of those 6-year-olds were hitting 20 feet in the air.
So now go to, I'll relate this to dogs because I just do the dog thing. Mm-hmm. When you have a young dog, a puppy to a young dog, like Daisy's age, up to 2 years old. I mean, really, let's set our expectations where they need to be. You release them from the line, and right before that, in your heart and your mind should be, pup, go out there and, you know, knock the shoe leather off. Just not and not run over every bush. I don't care.
Yeah.
Go find every bird in the countryside. That's your job. And where you find them, be off, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you, everyone, you know, sometimes people look and they're like, oh, your dog bumped a bird. Oh, okay. I'm going to take you out to the Sporting Clays range, and you're going to shoot 100 for 100. Mm-hmm. It's just not reality.
Yeah.
You know? Or, I don't know. You know, just in flushing dogs. Dogs miss birds. You know, the scent cone might not be there. They might be on an exhale when they're running instead of on the inhale.
That's why I think if I ran my dog for 10 miles before we started hunting, she would just be incredible. No, I mean that because at about the 10 mile mark, if I were to watch, you know, she's going so fast and running so unbelievably fast that I know she's running past birds at that speed because she bumps them sometimes. I watch her. Okay. After about 10 miles, she's hunting. She's hunting with us. And it's like almost two different dogs in the field, George. I mean, that's my experience with her. And she is so good at that point because she's just a little bit slower. She's thinking about it, what she's doing out there versus, you know, tongue hanging. And she's just, I mean, those giant leaps.
Yeah, she's grabbing ground.
Yes, it's a different dog after that distance. And I really think that it takes her a little bit of time to realize, oh, okay, let's do this together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's still a little kid.
Yeah. And so am I. And so are you.
That's right. I'm just a little bit older kid than you.
Yeah. So we came out here, obviously, to produce a TV show. We celebrated the opener. Like I said, Ben Bredigan, Simon Tietke, Ben. We've hunted together in the past. We are good buddies, and it's a lot of fun to hunt with buddies. That's what we love to do, and so it was pretty fun for us to be out here together. Observations, though, because we drove across a a lot of bird country on the way out here, and I know people want to know, what are you seeing? Birds, drought. I mean, it's on everybody's mind right now that is excited about the season to come. And we drove through North Dakota. Your thoughts all the way from, you know, through Minnesota,
yeah,
and through North Dakota, and then into Montana.
My thoughts, one word, dry. I mean, just sum it up like that. I live in southwestern Minnesota, and we're starving for rain there too. All the way up.
I feel, well, the last 2 weeks, though, we've gotten quite a bit. Well, I wouldn't say quite a bit, but we've gotten rain through Montana even. The Dakotas have gotten rain, Minnesota, Iowa.
We've got some since we've been here.
Yeah.
South Dakota, I know, the Aberdeen area, mm-hmm. From Mitchell up towards Aberdeen, all the way up towards Fargo. We saw on the weather mm-hmm. channel, whatever, that they got quite a bit of rain. And where I live, I think we've gotten 4 inches of rain in the last week, mm-hmm. I want to say, or a week and a half.
Yeah, about six in my place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you asked me a question, what it looks like. What does it look like at your place? Does it look like it did anything?
Yeah. It's noticeable. I mean, I think the question, though, is for what we're talking here, birds, is it too late for it to be helpful? And here's my thought on this. We're looking at cover that is typically quite a bit thicker. Grass, it's quite a bit taller. And the reason I think that's important is because most people are looking at this season, the next 4 months, coming up 5 months. That cover is important after the season when winter gets bad,
right,
and those birds need to survive. And that's what kind of worries me a little bit is, you know, if we have a tough winter, they don't have a lot of the cover that we want them to have because of the drought. And we're not going to grow that grass now with the rain that we're getting the last 2 weeks. It's great because when we're walking, we're not kicking up dust and it's not blowing in our eyes. And, you know, the ground is holding versus just blowing around. But I worry a little bit about what will happen this coming winter.
As far as cover goes, I agree 100%. Yeah. I mean, if we get a wicked winter, mm-hmm. which I'm a buyer for a company, and I subscribe to Weather Trends. So I'm looking at this.
The Farmer's
pretty,
Almanac?
I'm looking at the Farmer's Almanac for sure. And I don't, you know, the winter's going to come a little bit later, according to the experts, like February.
Yeah.
So this fall shouldn't be too terrible on them. So if we can get some healthy birds to get to, you know, quote unquote, to be an adult, we'll be better off. But if we get smacked, like you said, the grasses are just shorter. They're not as thick. I'll say there's a lot of birds in the landscape because we had a mild winter last winter.
Yeah.
And so we got great carryover. But we need another mild winter just because of the cover.
Yeah. And when I started the show, I said we'll talk about the good and the bad. I would say that's the bad, and that's some of the only bad. I will say, though, that there are definitely pockets or areas, you know, even just from driving 12 hours through bird country, you saw a lot of areas that looked okay.
Yeah.
You know, and holy crap, look at all the birds out there.
Right.
You know, so they're there, and I think we're going to start getting reports. There's going to be, you know, a lot of states are going to be giving you the information, and I think I'm going to have somebody on from North Dakota next week and then South Dakota after and talk, you know, pheasant forecasts. We're going to break down all the states because they're getting their surveys, roadside counts, and everything. If you're like us, we live in Minnesota and we want to go hunt 10, 15 hours west, we want to know what's happening over there. And I think a lot of people listening want to know that too. So, you know, as us sitting out there walking through the fields, firsthand view, we saw hundreds of birds this week. Hundreds.
Yeah.
You know, yep. And last season was great out here. Where we hunted out here, it was like My goodness. It was phenomenal. It's what you dream about.
Yeah, I was going to use that word phenomenal, but a lot of people use that word. Yeah. But it was phenomenal. I mean, there's just that sums it up pretty easy. Right. And back to the moisture thing, the grasses all the way out here, weren't they green? I mean, everything was kind of green. It wasn't burnt up and brown.
Right. I expected it to be drier.
So did I. Yeah. And we would go, like you said, there were pockets. We'd go and the cattail sloughs would be dry, you know, just white with salt.
Yep.
And then you drive another 50 miles or 40 miles, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, look at that slough. That slough's got water in it.
If you're a waterfowl hunter, you know, a lot of people, like, let's say North Dakota, that's a big deal in that state. It would be to hunt ducks and geese in the morning at first light and then go for a walk for pheasants. If you find the water pockets, holy crap, do you find the birds. I mean, they're really congregated.
They were. Yeah. We saw, I don't know, we'd see on the bank of a slough driving by, I don't know, 40, 60 ducks just all kind of stacked up, looking at each other like, some swimming around, whatever. It's like, okay, they're not dispersed.
Yeah, yeah. I would say more than 40 or 60 sometimes. Some of them had quite a few. But again,
I was driving.
Sure. You're so responsible.
I know.
The challenge there will be you're likely not going to be able to put your decoys in water and hide in cover on those sloughs because the water is so far from any vegetation for the most part. So that's going to be a challenge. But if you like to field hunt, the birds are still there and you can get next to massive amounts of birds really quickly. We're going to get into some of our particular hunts over the last couple days. But first, I want to give you a message from our presenting sponsors. Besides a bird dog, a shotgun, and a good pair of boots, the Onyx Hunt app is one of the most valuable hunting tools that I take into the field every day. I've been talking about the Onyx Hunt app since we started producing this show, and that's because I use it on every hunt. Their app tells me everything that we need to know about the lands that we want to hunt and the lands that we can legally hunt. If you've used it yourself, then you know that the Onyx Hunt app shows your location on planet Earth and clearly lays out the land boundaries. It also tells you information about the type of property you're on, like block management lands that we hunted this week in Montana. It's ideal for scouting before the hunt and during a hunt to help you put together patterns. The app also has new features this year that show you the kind of crops that are in fields, which is obviously a big deal for us upland bird hunters. If you hunt grouse in the North Woods, there's a timber cut layer to help you find that ideal habitat. If you're planning to hunt North Dakota this year like me, then there's a very important layer that was just added to the app. For the first time, landowners in North Dakota can post their property electronically. Onyx has you covered to make sure you don't cross those lines and hunt on property that you can't legally be on. Onyx maps can even be used in areas without cell coverage. From the palm of your hand, Onyx maps always help you know where you stand. For generations, bird hunters have hit the fields carrying some form of a vest or game pouch on their backs. Sometimes the vest rip, tear, and fall apart. Other times, they're downright uncomfortable. That's why Chief Upland designed a vest that's durable, comfortable, and fits your needs. Their new Upland vest is fully customizable to fit the size and shape of all hunters. Plus, you can decide where you want to attach your shell pouches and accessories. Last fall, and now this fall, I have worn a Chief Upland vest, and I love it. Birds can be front-loaded into the game pouch, and they fit nicely in the back without sagging. That's a big deal because the weight disbursement on your back and shoulders won't tire you out even with a full pouch of birds. The vest itself is extremely lightweight, weighing only 2.56 pounds. The material is built out of Cordura fabric, which is the same waterproof fabric used in tactical military gear. You can confidently hunt with a Chief Upland vest in some of the world's toughest environments. Order your Chief Upland vest now to make sure you're ready for opening day. Push further and hunt longer with a game-changing vest from Chief Upland, built for your pursuit.
Hey, Upland hunters. If you're looking for a place to chase roosters this fall, you need to check out Huron, South Dakota. Here's why. The access to public hunting land is awesome. They have plenty of pet-friendly hotels for the hardest-working member of your hunting group. In addition, Huron is hosting a couple great events this hunting season, the first weekend of November. The Ringneck Festival, a six-man competitive hunt, which draws hunters from all over the country, and the Bird Dog Challenge. It's the opportunity you and your dog have been waiting for, complete with food, prizes, camaraderie, and so much more. The South Dakota pheasant season opens October 16th, so plan your hunting trip to Huron, South Dakota today. Check out the website and learn more at huronsd.com.
George, we are in eastern Montana. I'm not going to say exactly where we are. A lot of people want to know, what town are you in? I don't think that's fair for people that are already planning to hunt in a certain area or the birds or the land. We're hunting public land, and there's a lot of it out here, a lot of it. I think Montana and their block management program is one of the greatest programs that bird hunters have to use available.
I agree, and I agree with all those statements you just said. There's a lot of the Montana Block Management Program is awesome. If you travel to other states, like Kansas has an incredible program also.
Walk-in access.
Yep. The Weehaws. Do your research. Get out there. You know, pick a spot on the map and make some phone calls. You know, kind of like the drought thing we were just talking about.
Yeah.
I know you can call some of the land managers, bird managers, wildlife people in each state and get at least a general idea of kind of where to go and where maybe not to go. Maybe they know that it's just, they didn't have the moisture, mm-hmm. and moisture is what birds need. But before you make the long drive, you can do some research and figure out where you want to go and then go. And then you got to spend some time.
Yeah.
And not, you got to spend some time driving around. You got to spend a lot of time walking, you know?
Yeah, we talked about that earlier, people might watch the show and say that looks like you guys had just birds everywhere. And we found a lot of birds. God bless our cameraman, Troy, for following us everywhere that we went. And has the passion to get the footage. We're hunting wild birds. Places. And the miles we put on is what makes for a great hunt. And the misses are just as fun as the hits, especially when it's your gun that misses and not mine.
Thanks, Dre.
Yeah.
I missed a few times.
You did.
I'll admit it.
Yeah. Same. If you're not, you're a really good shot. Ben is a really good shot.
Mm-hmm.
Hunting with Tyler Webster, he rarely misses. There's a few other hunters that I hunt with that are pretty darn good shots, and I'm average. And
you're above average.
Buddy. No, I'm my average.
I will say when you get out on some, we hunt quite a bit together. Mm-hmm. We hunt with Ben and all that. Mm-hmm. There's something about knowing your wingman isn't going to let you down. What I mean? Because after you've the first day, the first spot. Mm-hmm. We got out. We saw you just use an onyx. Like, okay, this spot over there looks good, but to get there, mm-hmm. we had to walk a mile at least.
1.5 miles.
1.5 miles
just to get where we wanted to go. And so that's something that people should know. There's some of these land areas that you maybe could take a two track to.
Yep.
This year they're saying you got to park here because they don't want anyone driving.
Yeah, park farther away.
Yeah, park farther away. No off road
travel. Zero off.
Yep. Yep. You don't want your vehicle going through any grass, potentially starting a fire. So I mean that put a few more miles. That's 1.5 miles each way that we had to walk, and Cowboy Troy's got to carry the camera for an extra. A couple miles. That's a lot of weight and batteries. Yeah. And again, God bless the cameraman.
No doubt.
But we get to this. We get to an area that we thought looked good, and all heck breaks loose.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about shooting. And the first morning, I never fired my gun. And we flushed hundreds of birds.
Yeah, that's again. I go back to having a good wingman.
Yeah.
You know how many times I fired my gun? Actually, in that walk, I think I shot four times, maybe. Two birds.
Yeah.
The other two hoodlums with us. Did you ever notice that you and I were the wingmen? You were on the far left. Yeah. I was on the far right. I tend to go right because I'm a left-handed shooter.
Yeah.
Those two, I'm going to be nice, knuckleheads, were right. They were always in the middle.
They're always.
They would cut us off. The dogs would go on point. I'm like, huh, look at that. Yeah. There goes Simon and Ben right to the can we get in there? No. They were in the right place at the right time. But they made, you know, it was.
We could have shot a four-man limit probably three or four times.
Correct.
You know, but we didn't. Again, we're producing a show about the hunt. Yeah. And therefore, me blazing through four grouse as fast as I can doesn't do what we want to do for the TV show and to be able to try to capture it. Because it got chaotic. And we had, at multiple points, dozens of birds in the air.
And right in front of us.
Yeah, dogs, you know, multiple dogs. In total, we have 9 dogs with us on this trip. But we don't run all of them at the same time. Why do you make the decision to run one pointer at a time versus both? And I ask this because I know some hunters that say, I want every nose that I can possibly have out there in the field giving me the better chance. And I would argue that doesn't necessarily give you the better chance.
Well, let's back up. You said, I mean, we have 9 dogs with us. Mm-hmm. We had a minimum of 4 dogs on each run. Mm-hmm. So we had dog power on the ground to work for us. Why don't I run? You know, I only have 2 pointers in my cocker.
Yeah.
If I could have 20 dogs, I'd have 20 dogs. I don't want to feed 20 dogs. That's why I have friends like you with Daisy, and I want to help you out so we have more dog power. Anyway, I have to – they're big running dogs. We have to pace ourselves, me and the dogs. So on a 3-day hunt, a 5-day hunt, you got to rotate them out. But
even still, I've hunted with you before that – just a single day hunt in Minnesota and you're not running both dogs, just one.
Correct. And the reason for that is those two dogs are going to work together, but they're also going to work separately. And they're going to find objectives. And those objectives might be 200 to 300 yards apart. Mm-hmm. So if I got one dog on point 300 yards out to the left and one 300 yards, not six, you know, 300 yards between the two of them.
Yeah.
Which one do I go to?
Right.
Now it's really, and my dogs are back. If there's another pointing dog out there, when the bird flushes, they're going to stop, chase, and all that good stuff. So it's awesome to watch two pointers work together and one point, one on or the, you know, backing and all that. But I can do that if I'm guiding. I can't do that if I'm hunting. There's just too much going on. I got to handle a gun. You know, so there's safety reasons.
Yeah.
There's containing the dog power that I do have, saving that energy. And it's I don't want to be stressed hunting.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, our first morning was phenomenal. Like I said, we could have shot a 4-man limit of sharp-tailed grouse multiple times if we chose to. We left the field without doing that. We did not shoot even our full limit, but again, the opportunities were there. So if you want to come out and hunt in Montana, and we're on the eastern side of Montana, we're kind of in a mix of that rolling hill and ag land. It's not mountainous here, but there's some areas that, you know, there's some nice big deep draws and pretty good variety of terrain out here. The birds are here. There are definitely birds here. And that's a question that a lot of people are wondering, are there birds here? Our first walk proved that. We saw what I would say was similar to what we saw last year. And that was excellent, exceptional, phenomenal bird numbers. So then we switched gears. We had veteran dogs out in the morning hunt. And then I'll bleep broke loose because we dropped three puppies, three pointing dogs out there for the evening hunt. And that's where the rocket ships all took off. Yeah. And Ben's got a 6-month-old English pointer. I've got Daisy. Simon has a 7-month-old English setter.
English setter, yep.
Yeah. And we switched from going to what we thought would be more grousey habitat, which was berry bushes, you know, that the short grass prairie, mm-hmm. not necessarily the ag lands.
Yep, choke cherry bushes.
And yes, yep.
Winterberry.
So things I noticed, I'm very observant all the time. I didn't feel like the berries were as thick as last year as far as amount of berries on the bushes.
Yeah.
So I think that could play into the rest of the season. But all the crops of the grouse were full of choke cherries.
Yep.
Choke cherries, not the
not buffalo berries,
not buffalo berries, no. Yeah, not snowberries or yep. whatever, you know, but the choke cherries and then grasshoppers, every step you took were flushing by the hundreds.
Oh my goodness.
Your vehicle, you can't tell what color it is because it's the color of grasshoppers.
Yeah.
And that's what is something that we can be excited about and thankful yep. for right now.
Yeah,
there are some droughts where you don't have that.
Yep.
Hungarian partridge are faring pretty well during these conditions, at least in this area. And historically, they do pretty well. Aren't as decimated sometimes by a lack of moisture. And we saw covey sizes of 20 birds.
Yeah.
You know, so that's something to be excited about as well. There are some grain fields, you know, that we're talking the very first week of September here. There's some grain fields that are still in. So I think there's a lot of optimism from my perspective for this particular hunting season based on what we've seen.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. If you followed any of our social media channels, you've probably seen a couple photos that we've posted, and there are cowboy hats in... in all the photos, which you'll have to watch the show to understand. George is shaking his head right now.
Shaking my head.
Yeah. Troy's over there cooking eggs and he's laughing. There's a reason why we all had cowboy hats, and I'll just say you got to watch the show for that. But I will tell you that the birds seem to be attracted to those hats.
I told you guys, you know, okay, I won't give it away or whatever, but you pulled one on me, I guess. I don't know. But you both look good in them.
Thank you.
And so my friend Travis here and my friend Ben, I just got to tell part of it, can I?
Sure, yeah.
I mean, they come walking around. I wear a cowboy hat all the time, every day since I've been, you know, pretty much like 12 years old when my grandfather gave me my hat. And anyway... So these guys have always given me a hard time. Why do you wear a cowboy hat? Well, I wear a cowboy hat, one, to keep the sun off me. Two, it helps me dog train, actually. But anyway, Travis and Ben come around the truck, unbeknownst to me, wearing cowboy hats. And I just look at them, and I bust out laughing, didn't I?
Yes, like, oh my. Yes. Oh.
So let's just get through this quick. When they wore their cowboy hats, birds, it was my friend who's a non-hunter. He likes to shoot, but he's a non-hunter.
Yeah.
He likes to call Pheasants Forever magazine, you know, mm-hmm. Pheasants Forever, the group, Quail Forever. Birds all over the place. He goes, hey.
It's all over.
Hey, I've gotten him to be like a member, you know, yeah. And he doesn't even hunt. But he goes, hey, he'll call me up. I got my Birds All Over the Place magazine. Nice. Anyway, so I'll say when they wore their cowboy hats, birds all over the place.
Birds all over the place.
Then they switched to their traditional upland
ball caps.
Ball caps.
Yep.
Not so birds all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
We still saw birds, but I'm like, I looked at you two when we got back to the truck. I said, put your cowboy hats back on.
And it worked. Holy cow. Did it ever work? But like, here's something that I learned that I didn't know because I dug into your story a little bit more to find out more about the cowboy angle. And yes, not only do I feel cool, but the birds love me too when I'm wearing that cowboy. I feel tough.
Boy.
Everything that, it just like, anyway.
Yeah.
But you said that
your cowboy hat is part of your, it's almost like part of your training tool. It's a reference point. That stood out to me for your dogs. Explain that.
Well, so when I'm dog training, mm-hmm. My dog training months are from March till now, till mm-hmm. opening day. And so it's generally, well, it's warm out. So I wear a straw, white straw cowboy hat or cream, whatever. White strawberry, or straw cowboy
drink
hat.
Drink some more coffee.
I should. Up. Anyway, and I'm wearing usually like
a white dark strawberry cowboy hat.
Just knock it off. When I'm out in the grasses and you're walking, you're not just walking a straight line. I'm getting the dogs to go with me. They can key in. They can see that because normally I'm wearing maybe a dark shirt or I blend in more. And I think the dogs can see that white hat a lot better. And they can see me moving through cover. And their job is to go with me. You know, not run the opposite direction mm-hmm. 300 yards. But
hey, do you hear that, Daisy?
Yeah, I think she lifted her head up and said, "Yeah, Roger that. I got that, boss."
Copy, Dad.
And then when it transitions a little bit cooler temps and, you know, especially if we get any snow on the ground and I'm wearing my black felt hat, mm-hmm. cowboy hat, they can see me. I think they can see me better. So, I don't know. Take it for what it is, but that's my MO.
Yeah. Well, it absolutely works. I think my recommendation for this season is get yourself a cowboy hat, come out to Montana, and watch the birds come to you.
Don't be a poser, though.
sure, don't. some a little bit of tragedy in this neck of the woods. It is warm, and that means that we do have to be careful about our dogs. And there was a hunter staying in town here when we were cleaning birds. He came over and talked to us to see how it went for us. And he said that he lost a dog on opening day in the field. It was 84 degrees, something like that, low to mid-80s for a high out here. And unlike a lot of days in Montana, there wasn't a lot of wind either. So it was warm.
Yeah, it
was I think we quit at about 10:30.
Yeah.
The first morning, and then we went out for the last hour and a half walk. But he said that, you talked to him. How did it happen?
Well, he got here, and I say he got here. He's from UP of Michigan. And so, and there could have been underlying factors. We don't know. We know part of the story, but anyway, he drove out here and he even said, you know, maybe my, and it was a 2.5-year-old English setter. And he got out, he got into his room, he got unpacked, let's go check out and see. He's been coming out here for like eight or 10 years or something like that. So he just wanted to go for a quick spin. And he said, well, I'll let my youngest dog, 2.5-year-old, you know, call it a pup almost. That dog was only on the ground 15 or 20 minutes.
That's it.
And he said it's a high energy, high powered, you know, it was a high powered dog. And so it had a lot of mojo going. It was booking. And but literally made one turn through some cover and they were coming back towards the truck. And heat stroke took over. And yeah, it's just.
Didn't make it out of the field with that dog.
Nope. And he did all the right things. What he tried to get the dog cooled down and, not knowing the full dog's history. I was talking to Ben Bredigan about it, or Ben and I were sitting there listening to this gentleman's story. And, afterwards we were wondering if, there might have obviously other underlying conditions. So know the health. Obviously we all take our dogs to the vet. So know your dog's history, but once your dog has had, I believe this is true, if your dog has been close to heat stroke or succumbed to that type once.
Makes them more susceptible.
Correct. So, and Ben's the one that told me this. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not a vet, so I don't know. So I don't want to tell things. But it's, you know, you got to keep an eye on your dog. I know opener is, like I said, Christmas morning, right? And everyone wants to get their dog out. And everyone's been waiting, you know, especially pheasant openers. And notoriously across the landscape, we have this early fall, right? We get these crisp mornings. Like this morning's pretty crisp out here. Mm-hmm. I think it was, got down to 40 last night.
Yeah.
So you lead up to pheasant opener, and there's probably a week or something like that in there where it got cool. And isn't it, Trav, like every opener, it drops to, or it goes up to 70, 80s. Yep.
Feels like it. You're going to run into those days out there. And it's just a tough reminder. I mean, it's fortunately we had 9 dogs. We no issues on this trip of any kind other than porcupines.
Oh, yeah. We got a porcupine. Yeah.
But other than that.
Yeah.
We didn't have any issues.
It's extremely important because there's a lot of people that hunt birds and we're all busy. And a lot of people get to hunt about a week a year.
Yeah.
Or a couple weekends a year. And a lot of those are opening days. Mm-hmm. And it tends to be warmer. And I'll just say it. I'm a brutally honest person. A lot of people aren't out there really exercising their dog and getting them used to that. They haul them out of the, you know, from the home, wave goodbye to the family and go, we're going to go hunting. And the next thing you know, their dog isn't doing too well.
Yeah.
And then this drought. Be extremely aware of water holes and what is in those water holes. The algae that's growing in there is not good. Mm-hmm. So carry enough fresh water with you and keep your dogs away from the water holes right now. That's not fresh water right now.
Is there a certain point that you feel comfortable letting your dog jump in the water hole? A certain point of the fall or when it cools down?
Yeah, after, I don't know what, I'm not a biologist, so I don't want to give any, I'd rather talk facts. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would say once it gets, like, once we've had a good hard frost, maybe that kills that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I just say that right now, just carry your own water and keep your dogs out of water holes.
Right.
If you find it, because it can't be good.
Right. It also, I think, is a good reminder, too. I mean, in this particular story, it happened really quick, 15 minutes. Most people aren't going to hunt less than that. You know, that's a quick run for something like that to happen. But we ran into porcupines out there, you know, and it's a good reminder to be prepared when you go hunting for what could happen. You know, you hope that it doesn't, but, you know, we all had pliers with, took out a lot of cactus out of my dog's foot this week, but also, you know, we had to pull quills this week. And, you know, what do you take into the field with you? Versus, you know, you've got a big first aid kit in the truck, but what are you carrying in the field?
In the field, I always have a side cutter that's strong enough to cut wire, mm-hmm. you know, like a snare wire.
Yeah.
I carry my command lead at all times. So for safety around roads with the dog, also, you know, I hunt where trappers are trapping, mm-hmm. and you know, I love trappers. They have just as much opportunity as we do to be out there, but be prepared and understand how to get a trap off a dog's leg, off if it's a conibear, off their head. And I carry heavy duty zip ties. So if I need assistance to hold that trap open, I mean, these are big zip ties.
Yeah.
I can get it around one of the jaws and hold that open. But with the command lead or a piece of rope, you can use that as leverage to get the trap off.
Yeah.
And then I always carry a Leatherman, some type of pliers with me to pull porcupine quills to get the cactus out. Mm-hmm. You know, one time I reached down to use my pliers, I think it was on Minnie, and she like shook her head, or because she pulled it off her own paw, but now it was stuck to her face, and the cactus went into my hand.
Oh, I heard that.
What did I squealed?
Yeah, you did.
So, but really, a side cutter to get yourself out of, because you mm-hmm. can't, if it's a snare. Mm-hmm. You absolutely positively cannot get a pair of, say, multi-tool up underneath that snare to where the cutting jaws part of that pliers is, mm-hmm. you can't do it. So I hope, I would think everyone knows what a side cutter is, but
yeah,
and get yourself a good pair. Don't buy the cheap ones. Mm-hmm. And long enough handle so you can get enough leverage to cut that.
Mm-hmm. Good reminders, buddy. I'll also say early season, we saw a lot of pheasants too. Mm-hmm. We saw sharp tails, Hungarian partridge, and pheasants. That's primarily in this part of Montana where we're hunting. That's what we're going to see. I saw reports of people that found sage grouse as well, blues, you know, duskies. You know, so it's good to be back in the field, but I think identification is crucial. There were several points where there's enough pheasants out here that you're going to run into pheasants in sharp tail cover that you didn't anticipate. Let's just say that. And no, oh, yes. Because they were flushing in areas when it got wild there. There were birds flying in all kinds of directions, and and you have to be able to distinguish. And there's a lot of young birds out here right now.
There are.
Very young birds.
Yeah, a lot of young pheasants that one. Tucker went on point. We went up there, and then Minnie flushed it out of the bushes. Mm-hmm. And I think it was three or four pheasants come out. And I must hunt a lot of different birds because I think I named off every one of them except for sharp. I was trying to make sure everyone did not. We identified quickly, but
yeah,
I think at one point I even went quail or something like that.
Some of them were about that size.
I was so tongue twisted, but then I finally just yelled, "Don't shoot!"
Yeah, I was either yelling no or hen. That was the first thing that would come to my mind.
Yeah,
but just a reminder that bird identification is extremely difficult this early in the season. But the fact that we're yelling that much means that there's birds here. And I think that's the moral of this podcast, is that if you've listened this long, it's because you've wanted to know what we've seen out here. You might be coming west soon, anticipating your hunt. I want you to be excited about it. I don't think you should be scared about it. I know people that have canceled hunts this year because of the drought. And to that I say, you know what? Maybe call back and say, I do want to go hunt. I understand that it's dry. I'll be respectful of the land, and I still can go for a walk. Maybe that particular area, certainly drier parts of the country. Some areas got more moisture at critical times, and there's grass there. So again, you might have to adjust your plans a little bit, but don't cancel them.
Yeah.
And maybe set lower expectations, but if you put the miles on, there's birds out there. We had a lot more, as well as an incredible sharp tail pizza that we cooked up. So we got more for the television show that we'll save. I will say that I think it's worth watching, and I do think that it's a show that I hope you guys are proud to be a part of. I'm always proud to be a part of all of the episodes and the people that I get to film with. So George, thanks for heading west with me for an opening day adventure. Opening week in Montana was one for the books again. It's exciting time of the year. Hunting season is back.
It is. It's as bird hunters, as any hunter, as your season gets closer, if you're a bow hunter, mm-hmm. if you're a deer hunter. But this time of year for birds is just, I got goosebumps right now just thinking of. This is just the first part of it.
It's here.
I'm listing off someone. I think it was Bob St. Pierre from Pheasants Forever asked me, "So George, what's your season looking like?" And I started listing off where I'm going.
Yeah.
In my head, I'm going, okay, yeah, I'm going to hit 5 states, mm-hmm. At least. And I'm so fired up about it. And get out there, and you know, these towns need your support. The restaurants, the little, buy your groceries local if you can, you know, that kind of deal.
Yeah.
Be good stewards of the land. Be aware of how dry it is. Don't put your vehicle, try to keep your vehicle on gravel as much as possible.
Walk a little further and play it safe.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I just got to say thank you, Travis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
These are adventures that I never want to miss. I'm very grateful for the opportunity that that you've afforded me. Scott Franzen has said, gave him the nod, I guess, or maybe we just go Western on him and just do this without his blessing. But yeah. I want to say thank you to Scott. He's become a really dear friend of mine. And this takes a lot of energy and a lot of resources to put podcasts together, to put TV shows together. And I've been very fortunate to be been a lot of flushes. So yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. It's equally an honor for me to be out here too. Every time I go on a trip like this, and again, like I've said before, I love getting in a truck, going places. We hunted land this week that we've never seen before, and I always want to know what's on the other side of the hill, just like my dog.
Yep, for sure.
And let it be known that there are birds on the other side of the hill if there you come are. Out this way.
Don't cut yourself short. Look over the other side yes. of the hill.
Yeah, take it. Let my dog teach you one thing. Check out what's on the other side of that hill, because it's phenomenal.
I'm shaking my head.
Yes. With that, cowboy cameraman Troy has our breakfast waiting, and there's more excitement to be had today. So we'll end it right there. Depending on when you're listening to this, the episode this week on our Flush Television Show on the Outdoor Channel happens to be an adventure that you and I took out here last year with our buddy Ben Bredigan and Custis Coleman for the pheasant opener and the mixed bag of birds that we got into on public lands out here. Thank you to the landowners that enroll your property into the block management out here and in all the other programs around the country, because without it, we couldn't have made the memories that we made this week. We just couldn't have done it.
I agree. And, you know, one thing, you know, I just want to say thank you to all landowners.
Yeah.
Because did you notice, like, some of the spots, it just seemed to me like they left a little bit extra on the edge. You know, whether it was habitat cover, mm-hmm. it just seemed like draws were a little wider. I don't know. Or they left those last, you know, we're hunting wheat, so 12 strips is only 12 to 18 inches wide, but it yeah. just seemed like around the edges, you know. So every state out there that does these open to, you know, the land owner programs, it's just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I tip their hat to them. And out here in the block management, you got to sign in,
yep,
and identify yourself, your vehicle, you, all that stuff. Yep. And then you have a card that you keep, and that's your permission slip, sort of. And then at the end, after you are done hunting, you put it back in that box, right? Mm-hmm. On every one of them, and there's a little spot that says comments.
Thank you.
I say thank you, yes. And I put two exclamation points. Ooh, because
I went three on one of them. It was not, really good.
Yeah. Without it, it's, yeah. you know, it's, and I think you and I are, we love the public hunting piece of it.
Yep.
I love being able to go out and, you know, I love hunting lodges and all that. That's a blast to get together with friends and family mm-hmm. and do all that. But I'm a big rough grouse hunter, and that requires a lot of land. There's just a lot of public land. I love doing these adventures on places that everyone can go.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And millions of acres of publicly accessible property out here. In Montana, the Dakotas have a bunch. I mean, it's around the country. Do a little research. You won't regret it. Hop in the vehicle and enjoy a hunting trip like this. With that, we'll sign off for today. But from Montana, and the birds are here, positivity, a lot of good. More good than bad. But what an opening week it's been. It's been a pleasure, George. If you have any questions or if you have any guest ideas for this podcast, please send them my way. If you have any bird dog stories, I don't have one that I'm sharing today because I'm not back at headquarters, and that's on me. Bad shame on me. I'll tell the story next week. But if you have any questions or ideas or stories, please send them our way. We'd love to share them on this podcast. You can find us at theflush.tv or on our social media channels. Just search for The Flush TV or Travis Frank, You can find me as well. I know a lot of you send me messages direct. I love them. I love hearing from you talking about bird hunting. This is what we love to do, and I know you do too. So thank you for joining us today from the Upland Cowboys. Checking out here, George.
Right on. Thank right you. On.
Yeah. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank, reminding you to take the time to introduce someone new to the field.